In this episode of Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska, our subject is outdoor adventure legend Dick Griffith.
I run into, I don't know how many polar bears, because I've gone through, I figured, 3,500 miles of polar bear country, and I've had a few run-ins.
This is Chris Zwolinski, one of the executive producers for Dark Winter Nights. I wanted to showcase Dick in this podcast episode to bring attention to an important person in the wilderness hiking, backcountry skiing, and remote river rafting circles. Dick Griffith died this past December at the age of 98. He came to Alaska in the early 1950s, not only raising a family here, but also pursuing his love for exploring wilderness. Logging over 6,000 miles of solo trekking across Alaska on skis and on foot, Dick is also credited with inventing the modern-day pack raft. I met Dick in the 1980s as he was boarding a small airplane on his way to begin another long-distance cross-country ski trip where no trails existed. Dark Winter Nights host Rob Prince got Dick to sit down for an on-stage interview in November 2015.
First of all, 6,000 miles, what keeps you moving? You talk in the book about sometimes not even knowing why you're out there.
Oh, what keeps me moving? It's my two legs.
Okay.
I have wonderful legs.
I'm getting a sense this is going to be like a ventriloquist act or something like that.
You know, I have a hard time hearing. But, you know, when I was young, I had an eagle. And then I reached maturity at the age of 50. And it was just time a year to go. And I was addicted.
Addicted to walking by yourself through the wilderness?
Yeah, I go by myself because my partners don't do very good. I lost a lot of partners.
Well, can you tell us what happened to them?
Do I what?
What happened to them?
Well, they get lame. Most of them get crippled. And and they get tired and discouraged and disgusted, and they leave me.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I'm getting a little discouraged, I think. Oh, it's just on the walks that they... Okay. You say in the book that Mother Nature wants us dead. What made you feel that way, that Mother Nature wants us dead?
Not really. I've had a lot of personal scrapes out there, but they weren't. None of them were serious, really.
I don't know if you all can hear the audience reaction a little bit on that.
You don't have to believe any of that.
I don't. I've seen the pictures, actually. How about answer this? How did you get the nickname Black Ass?
I didn't think we could use that word, but...
Okay. It's okay.
I had walked from Kaktovik to Anaktovik. I got to Anaktovik and... The wind was blowing 30 miles an hour. It was 30 below zero. And the native says, you can't make it. The snow's too deep. And so I threw all my stuff away. I threw my stove away, my tent away. And I took a great sleeping bag, a pot, and some matches, and some food. And I went south. I was skiing down. I tried to reach the tree line where I could build a fire. Once I got in the tree line, I was safe. And I wasn't paying attention because I was skiing real fast. It was downhill. It was great. And the wind blew up underneath my coat, and that didn't bother me too much. And I decided when it got dark, I had to camp. And so I didn't reach the tree line. I couldn't build a fire. So the only thing I could do was dig a trench, throw my sleeping bag in a trench. And when I opened up my sleeping bag, I found out that it was off the track. So I took my gloves off, put it back on the track. I froze all my fingers, but my two index fingers, in 30 seconds. It was that cold. It was 40 below zero, and the wind was 40 miles an hour. So I dumped my sleeping bag in the trench, and the snow drifted over the top of me. I got warmed up, and there was something wrong with my butt. You know, I felt back there, it was like cardboard. And I said, man, this is bad, you know? But I survived the night, and next day put my skis on. I could hardly get on my skis, and I was pulling a sled. And it took me 6 days to get to Crevice Creek. There was a homestead there, operated by Bill Ficus and Lil Ficus. I got there at 9 o'clock at night. It was still 30 below zero. The wind was still blowing, and what happened was I was freezing. My butt froze a little bit harder every day, a little bit deeper. And Bill flew me into Bettles, and I caught an airplane to Anchorage. Of course, everybody moved to the back end when I got on because I smelled so bad. It was really bad. And I made it to Providence Hospital. I was there for a month. I had extensive skin grafts. And I got out of the hospital, I was on crutches. I had to work standing up. When something like this happens, a lot of derogatory names you get. My friends call me black ass. My colleagues call me a half-assed engineer. That made me mad. Yeah. But that's enough for that story.
Okay. Yes, thank you. You stopped carrying a weapon as you traveled. Why did you stop carrying a rifle or a gun? You don't carry a weapon?
Of course, there's polar bears. You're supposed to be worried about polar bears and wolves and all this stuff. And polar bears are nothing.
I feel the same way. They're totally overrated.
But you know, the fox is so horrible. When I was out there, 40% of them were rabid. And just before I got to Kivalina, it was early in the morning, I saw this shadow next to me, and he grabbed my leg. The shadow did. That's all I saw. And I was in my sled and a harness, and so I reached back and I tried to stab the fox with my pole, and I missed him, and I fell down on the slick ice, and I was tied to my skis and tied to the sled, and a fox got me. He got me again on the glove. He got me on the chest. Of course, I knew immediately I was rabid. There was no way. Because he did a number on me. But I noticed that, you know, it didn't break any skin, but I was still rabid. And so I said, I got to get to Kivalina, and I need help. It was a shortcut. There was some soft ice out there, and all I had to do was cut across this soft ice, and I'd get to Kivalina quick. And I got out there about a quarter of a mile. I fell into the ocean. I dropped through the ice. And it's really not a big deal. You just break the ice off, and you climb back up. And it was
simple,
10 below.
Really.
It wasn't really cold.
The frozen ocean wasn't really that cold?
It's what?
The ice under the water under the ice wasn't that cold?
No, because
okay.
It just froze. It's what you call new ice. There's fast ice and there's new ice.
Oh.
When you travel in the ocean, you know, you've got these terms that goes with it. There's pressure ridges and tide cracks, and it's all kinds of garbage out there. But I fell in and I got out, and of course, I was froze immediately like a popsicle, you know, but it's nothing really. You just get in your tent and you start your little stove up. You heat up some boiling water in a halogen bottle, and you thaw out your clothes, and that's it. And when I got to Kivalina, I told the natives, I says, I'm rabid. And they laughed at me. They looked at my little mark on my leg, and I said, that's nothing. The kids get bit all the time just going to school. Yeah. And so I said, gee, yeah, you know. But my problem was I told people in Anchorage. And you never tell people in Anchorage, you know, I come from Anchorage. Don't tell them anything. Yeah, the doctors wanted me to come back and be a man and get my, you know, the long shots, whatever they are. I kept on going. I got up to Point Hope, and I went past Point Hope. And so The natives thought I was kind of incompetent. They figured that I wasn't rabid, but I was a white man. I didn't know anything. They thought I'd went out on the ice, because the ice goes back and forth, you know. It goes back in the ocean, and it runs back up on shore, and it goes back out. I always stay on the ice, because that's the best place to camp. So from Barrel, they sent a helicopter down to pick me up. And the helicopter couldn't find me. They come 300 miles. So the next day, they sent two airplanes to find me, and they finally found me. This rabies thing went on and on forever, but I didn't go back and get my shots. I just toughed it out.
With perseverance, you too can conquer rabies. It's really just sissies. You die in 72 hours. You wrote in your diary that you almost wished that you did have rabies on this trip so you could back out of the trip gracefully. And my question is, gracefully for who? Who are you worried about impressing at this point? Who are you worried about? You said you wanted to back out gracefully.
Well, I wanted to get out of this. I was suffering up there because I still didn't know how to travel in the Arctic. Because I had a little gasoline stove that was worthless, and I had a frozen sleeping bag. And that was a graceful way to abandon the trip at Point Lay or Wainwright and get the hell out of there because things were tough up there. But I just kept on going. I kept on going. The Barrel made it anyway. You see, if I had rabies, I could go back and be in a nice warm place and for a change. Yeah.
Rabies is such a relief, I know. But I'm trying to get at, are you trying to impress someone when you make these trips? You know, or are you trying to prove something to someone?
I didn't have any sponsors. I only had one sponsor, and that was my wife, my working wife. You young guys out there, take notes.
I left my pen over there, but...
Yeah, a working wife is handy to have. Yeah, where were we anyway?
I lost track. You're talking about sponsors, I think. Sponsors? You had no sponsors, but your working wife was your sponsor.
Yeah, my working wife.
Who are you trying to impress with all this is my ultimate question.
I wasn't trying to impress anybody. There was a lot of stuff I did that was really more impressive than this, but we'll not go over that tonight.
Are you talking about this right now?
Yeah.
Or, oh.
Yeah.
I won't take that personally. You talk about reading books on these trips, and that you have a certain quota for a number of pages you have to read a night. What part does reading play in your travels?
It played the biggest part.
Why?
Because I had to read books in order to... By this time, when I got the Barrel, I couldn't suffer anymore. I decided I had to do something. I had to keep dry at night. I wanted a warm sleeping bag, dry clothes, so I got a wood stove. It weighed 8 pounds. Can of gasoline weighs 8 pounds, so I got a wood stove. And at nighttime, I'd have to read 6 pages. 3 pages for in the morning, and 3 pages for night. And, you know, I read lots of good books. I read the Book of Mormon. They didn't care if I burn it, long as I read it, so... I read it.
Did they really say that? Did you ask them about that?
It's but not just, like the Quran, you know?
Yeah, thank goodness you didn't read the Quran. But just to clarify, you had to read to start the fire. You used the pages that you read. I mean, this is the ultimate inefficiency. You read a book and then you tear the pages out that you read and make a fire. And your light gets lower, your pack gets lower. I'm just going to stop. Your pack gets lighter as you go along as you read, and you start fires with the pages, right? Is that how it works?
Yeah, I don't know. I collected a lot of wood on the way. There's a lot of wood that comes out of the Mackenzie River, and if you're like me, you like pieces of wood like some women collect teacups, you know. I collected wood until my sled got heavier and heavier.
At one point, I think you came across some rather interesting reading. In one of the villages, you picked up some books?
Yeah, I forgot about that. I forgot my books when I got to Kaktovik, and I stayed at Waldo Arms, and they had a lot of Harlequin romance, a whole library. So I gathered up a whole bunch of them. And they make good fires. They're hot. Yeah, they're hot.
They're hot books. I get it. In all these travels, Dick, have you learned anything about life and what it means to be human and spending all this time by yourself out in the wilderness?
You know, I didn't learn anything.
Dick Griffith, ladies and gentlemen.
We are listening to Dick Griffith tell us some of his adventures in A Dark Winter Nights live show with host Rob Prince on stage at Herring Auditorium in Fairbanks, Alaska. This is Chris Zwolinski, your host for this episode. That show was in 2015. Adventurer Dick Griffith influenced generations of Alaskans and became a mentor to fellow explorers who shared his passion. Accounts of his stories have been told in a biography by Kayleen Johnson Sullivan, titled Canyons and Ice. The book explains how Dick grew up on a Wyoming ranch during the Great Depression, and his desire to leave a life of poor existence led him to exploring wilderness. He learned to run rivers with a boat he built himself after reading a magazine article. On the rivers, he met Isabel, the woman who would become his wife. Together, they rafted the Southwest states and Mexico before moving to Alaska in the 1950s. Here, they raised two children and never quit exploring and expanding their horizons. Dick was featured on the Dark Winter Nights stage in November 2015. He was such a hit, we invited him to return the following March during the Arctic Science Week in Fairbanks. In this next section, Rob Prince and Dick Griffith sit down again to finish Rob's long list of questions.
So, in all fairness, the last time we did this, Dick, I gave you like a heads up on what the questions were going to be, right?
That's right. And I couldn't hear anything you said.
Yeah. So it was win-win.
Yeah.
This time I haven't given you any clue what I'm saying, so you can't fake your answers, right? You say that a wise man once said the ultimate quest has no end. That's still feel that way?
I still feel that way. I just got off the Grand Canyon last week. I had a 24-day trip. I go down every year. I'm a boatman. I love the canyon country. The Grand Canyon hasn't changed all that much. Well, it has changed. You got to pee in the river now.
They make you do that.
You got to carry your poop out, too. And, you know, I make two big pots of coffee every morning. Yeah.
I don't know if I want to know where this is going.
I drink three big mugs, and I get on this rowboat, you know, and you don't want to go to shore. And I used to be able to pee halfway across the river. Now I pee
That's
on my
good
shoes.
Range, my friend. That's pretty impressive. I don't think I could make it to the edge of the stage, to be honest.
Where are we going? Oh, we got to get to Alaska. I came back to Alaska in 54. I guess we're supposed to talk about climate, right?
Or Alaska. I'll take either right now.
Okay, climate. When I got to Anchorage, you know, it was 20 and 30 below zero every winter, and people were dying in the streets, that's honest. And now it's got warmer and warmer and warmer, and the people aren't dying anymore. And we got more people in Anchorage than we know what to do with.
Yeah. I just want to clarify what what you deem the problem to be here.
Yeah, okay. Where are we going from here?
I have all these smart questions for you.
Wait a minute.
What about the Arctic called you so strongly? Why do you have to go up there and walk?
I've spent so much time. You know, these people, some of these people, they go out on a snow machine. They camp two nights on the Arctic, and they put up a wire line, electric fence around their tent, and then they go back on their snow machine.
Glamping, I think we just determined that.
Yes, I'm a purist. I went with skis. I pull my own sled. I don't have dogs. Well, I did, but I ate them. But, yeah.
I think, yeah, that'll be, we're going to have you on in April.
Yeah. That's another story.
Yeah, okay.
Let's see. What did I, I remember what I did. I walked from Kaktovik to Anaktuvik in 1959. And then from there on, I went to Kotzebue. And there were so many mosquitoes that I hate mosquitoes. There's just so many. So I started traveling in wintertime because there's no mosquitoes in the wintertime. Everybody knows that. I started at Nuiqsut, and I skied to Anaktuvik and Anaktuvik to Bettles and Bettles to Alakakut and over the Ray Mountains to Tanana and down to Unaklit. And then I retired in 1989 so I could just keep going. So I started at Unaklit and I skied to Barrel. That's 900 miles. I made it in 63 days. When I got the Barrel, I decided I'll go to Kaktovik. So I skied to Kaktovik. And when I got to Kaktovik, I decided to keep going. And next year I went to Taktitoyaktuk. And then from there I went to Palatuk and Klugatuk and Cambridge Bay, Joehaven, Pelly Bay, and I ended up in Repulse Bay at the end of Hudson Bay, and at the time I was 73 years old when I finished. And my travel across the Arctic was pretty slow. I only made 15 miles a day. That's my average speed. So I was out there actually over a year. And speaking of global warming, I keep seeing these ridiculous pictures of these starving polar bears. Sitting on a block of ice. I've seen starving moose. They look the same way. I've seen starving caribou. They look the same way. And I run into, I don't know how many polar bears, because I've gone through, I figured, 3,500 miles of polar bear country. And I've had a few run-ins, but I'm very careless. Don't listen to me, but I sleep on my food, and I cook inside my tent. I never cook outside the tent. It's too hard to cook outside your tent.
It's much easier to die of carbon monoxide, is that what you're saying?
No big deal. Yeah. Polar bears, they're gentle creatures. They really are. They got a bad rap, I still think so. All the natives carry weapons, and I don't carry anything. I don't carry a rifle, pistol. Well, for one thing, I can't get on the airplane. I can't carry bear spray. I can't carry a flare gun. I can't carry none of that stuff. So I just deal with one-on-one basis. When they come into my camp, I grab a ski and my sled, and I beat on my sled, and I run them off. And they stay away. They don't like me. And, well, I had one of them go around my tent once all night long. I went out in the tent, and I saw this ring of polar bear tracks around and around and around. All night long, he went around and around and around. And I never did see the bear, which is lucky. But they say that the polar bears are real hungry, and they eat people. You know, if they ate me, I'd be in little brown piles in the Arctic. They didn't eat me. but I had one polar bear that I had to use my wits on. It was way over in eastern Canada. It was towards Joehaven. And in the morning, I heard the crunching of snow, and then I saw the silhouette against my tent. So I yelled, and the bear went away, of course, but I knew I had to run it off, so I thawed out my zippers. It takes about 5 minutes to get out of a tent. The zippers are all froze. And I grabbed my sled and my ski, and I beat it, and I run the polar bear off, and I went back in, cooked up breakfast. I have a wood stove, by the way. I cooked up breakfast, and when I went out, the bear was laying about 50 yards from my tent, waiting for me to come out.
You had to wait till after you had breakfast, probably. Yeah. It's like a two for one.
So I knew I had to get rid of this bear, and I didn't have any way, really. I ran him off again, but this time when he ran him, he kept going sideways, and he looked back at me. I knew he wasn't going to stay. So I went back in the tent. By the way, I forgot to tell you, but the first time I went back in the tent, there was three great big slits in my tent. He had sliced his paw down, ripped my tent open. I didn't even know it because the wind was blowing. And he just missed my sleeping bag by about 4 inches. Anyway, I went back in and I cooked up or melted some, thawed out some fish strips, and I buried 20 Advil and 10 Tylenol in it. And I dropped it in my track, and the polar bear, of course, as soon as I left the camp, he picked it up and ate it, and he followed me for about 2 hours, and he just disappeared. Never saw him again. So don't let anybody tell you that polar bears are dangerous. They're not.
Are there any children here? I just want to double check.
Yeah.
We might have to talk a little afterward. One thing I'm curious, you worked as an engineer. Why didn't you get a job in the outdoors?
Actually, I was at a desk job. Yeah. I just had to go look at runways. You know, we were just talking about Chishmref a few minutes ago. I worked on that for a long time. I worked on all the village runways, Anaktuvuk and Fairbanks and Kotzebue and Barrel, everywhere. I worked on runways.
Why didn't you find, if you enjoy the outdoors so much, why didn't you work in anything, outdoors, a forestry person or something?
I was a geologist, and I starved to death.
Oh.
Now you know.
They don't pay you to stand out there, do they?
I had to go back to school and get smart real quick.
You mentioned this you kind of had to be at our last show, but I really have to follow up on this. You said at one point that it's really handy to have a work wife.
Are you young guys out there?
And we didn't get a chance to get into what that meant. And a lot of people asked me afterward, how come you didn't follow up on that? I'm doing that now. What is a work wife?
A working wife is a wife that lets you go on all these trips, and she supports you.
I didn't think those things existed. I thought it was like unicorns and working wives. Yeah. And a land with no taxes or something. So what does this look like? Describe to me what does a working wife look like?
They can be very beautiful.
Oh wow!
Yes.
Really?
Yes, they can be very beautiful. Well, she carried a big insurance and policy on me, of course.
Go, honey, go, please. Stay as long as you want. Don't bring a gun.
Yeah.
That's too heavy.
That's the way to overcome all this stuff, is carry an insurance policy. But you young guys, remember, if you got to get married, get a working wife. Don't mess around.
That is for the kids, if you're listening, I would say. Take that to the bank. Yeah. A couple final questions here. Is there anything about the Arctic that scares you?
This place scares me than the Arctic.
Public speaking.
Look at all those eyes out there.
Public speaking scares you more than the Arctic.
There
you go.
You know, the biggest problem in the Arctic is the big blows. You get those blizzards that come and they wipe you out. They cover up your tent with snow, and you don't know if it's going to fall down, and they're bad. The big blows are. They're a little bit hard to survive. In extreme cold, that's nothing.
Good. And then finally, do you like people? Do you like people?
Some people.
Okay. Dick Griffith, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska, that featured Dick. It was edited by Robin. Remember, these are the stories we tell up here in Alaska on Dark Winter Nights. I'm Chris Zwolinski.